Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 970. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Honestly, I think I about went crazy watching wrestling this weekend. Because
There was a lot of it.
I've got to admit, like, we're probably not going to touch AEW and we're not going to touch NXT, and there is still plenty of topics to fill the old scorecard here. Just from Money in the Bank and Raw, and, well, just at least a small dose of SmackDown. So, to me, the men's Money in the Bank briefcase match kicked off the show, kicked off the premium live event for us. And as we had talked about, Drew McIntyre seemed like the logical person to win this match. And he did. Then we ended up with him cashing in. And exactly as we had, well, I think you first suggested it, and I just glommed on afterwards. That CM Punk was going to wait until the moment that Drew cashes in
yes.
to screw him over. Like,
but there's a strong caveat to that. I did not think that the Priest-Rollins match wouldn't be over before Drew McIntyre showed up with the briefcase and made it a triple threat. Yeah, that part I did not think was going to happen. And I was also pretty adamant about Seth Rollins regaining the championship, which also did not happen. So yes, McIntyre comes in after a horribly botched, you know, between whether or not after the superplex into the Falcon Arrow, whether it was the referee's fault, whether it was Priest's fault, whether the a combination of that with the music guy's cue being off or McIntyre not being in place, that part of the finish, that was legendarily bad.
That was, I think someone. I think I read Brian Alvarez talking about the botches in the women's ladder match. And honestly, I'd forgotten about them until watching some replays. Still not as offended by them. Like that Damian
Priest. No, I'm not offended by them at all.
The Damian Priest non-kickout, that was one that just stuck out to me. Like, if you're going to talk about botches on that pay-per-view, like, to me, that one was on Damian Priest, unless he was waiting for a musical cue.
But still, he should have the self-awareness to get his shoulder up then if it's not coming. That's just kind of that weird thing of, if you've noticed, wrestlers are just, their eyes are open on pinfalls now more and more. They're not just listening to the cadence of the count to know when they kick out. And then that just a complete screw up. I guess in the end, it was probably Priest's fault. It really wouldn't have been the referee's fault, because the referee's supposed to the referee's supposed to keep counting. I mean, or it's again, if the music cue was off some, if Priest, McIntyre wasn't quite in place for his music cue.
Oh, right.
But still, Priest should have been well aware of his surroundings and what was going on to get his shoulder up. Yes, yes, that was on Priest.
I definitely think yes. So. And there was a slight hands to head gesture. Maybe after it had all sunk in.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone realized that finish just it didn't land. It didn't work. I mean, I'm this is gonna get more into this. When we get to talking about the moments of all of these people on Raw, but this thing has gotten real. It's getting way more convoluted than it probably needed to be. Rollins' return feels like it has messed with original plans. Like, the original plan was for him not to be back in time for Money in the Bank, SummerSlam, let alone Money in the Bank. So now he has to be shoehorned into things that he wasn't originally supposed to be part of.
Well, yeah, it is kind of funny that he fits in the storyline, but he doesn't fit in the storyline,
He
like you're
fits
saying.
because, you know, it's the end. He was the second to last world champion before Priest. Obviously, he's the one who lost to McIntyre at WrestleMania. He's got all this. He's got his history with McIntyre. He's got his history with Punk. But him and Punk, it's just like, it just feels like it's way too soon. Even though it's supposed to happen 6 months ago, it feels like it's way too soon for him and Punk to be interacting at all again. And, you know, they had to do a screwy fit. You don't want to beat Bronze on his first night back, but you didn't want to change the title, so you had to do a screwy finish within the match itself, and not just, you know, one person wins and then it's just cashed in on. The whole thing came off way more awkward. You know, Punk's involvement, you know, because he's running it on an actual match that other people are involved in. So what he's doing with McIntyre just isn't. Yeah, this is the one thing that they've done with. And I was in favor of this. I was in favor of them, you know, quote unquote, wasting the Money in the Bank contract in the same night. But the way that they did it, you know what? It was questionable.
Yeah, maybe not my favorite way that it's been done. Just because it just feels like there's a level of arrogance to that kind of suits McIntyre, that he thinks he can beat both of them. But it's also like it's one of those things where you just have to question, like, you know what the formula is at this point. You know what I mean? Like, if you're, 'cause what, did John Cena lose a cash in, I want to say, because he wanted a straight up match with someone?
Something like that, yeah.
'Cause he's like, he might be the only cash in fail that I'm kind of okay with, because like Damian Sandow got it. It's just like, why did you even give it to him? Kind of a situation, you know? And I'm trying to think of what the other. I feel like there's one other failed cash in outside of this most obviously this one at this past Money in the Bank here.
There's been a number. There's been a few. There was Austin Theory cashing in on the United States Championship and losing.
Oh God, I forgot about that one. Even though I shouldn't have, like that's pretty recent history.
Yeah, that was pretty recent. There's of course Otis losing the Money in the Bank case completely.
But didn't the person that he lost it to, 'cause didn't he lose it to the
Yes,
Miz, and then the
Miz.
Miz
Yeah,
did cash in?
Miz did cash in. Yes. Yes, Miz did cash in. Yes, but yeah, but once again, this was all a lot of most of this was in service of the Punk McIntyre feud,
Oh, yeah.
and then they completely invalidated, even though they weren't written stipulations, they completely invalidated the gentleman's agreement the very next night, with Priest promising Rollins a title match down the line.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah, that definitely an interesting choice there. But again, what does Seth Rollins even do at SummerSlam? Either he has to
Oh.
be put into a triple, either he has to be put into a triple threat with Gunther and Priest, or he's gonna be put in a triple threat with Punk and McIntyre, essentially. Because the way that
Yeah.
they're doing this now. Now, granted, another thing complicating this whole thing is CM Punk is still not cleared yet, and it is not fully guaranteed that he will be by SummerSlam. They believe he will be, he probably will be, but he could still have some kind of setback and blow the whole thing there too.
Yeah, that was
So you got
the
to keep your options open too. So I understand that in some sense that they got to keep some options open here too.
yeah, that I think that is the wild part, and why, it feels like, to kind of go back to one of your earlier points, that Seth Rollins and CM Punk feuding, just like, even though it happened when Punk initially came back and they made a big deal out of it, that seems like it happened 5 years ago because of how much at each other's throat McIntyre and Punk
Yeah,
have been.
it does not feel like we're ready to go back to Punk and Rollins. That could certainly wait to 2025.
Yeah.
It probably should, but again, that's the byproduct of Rollins coming back so early with not much else for him to do.
And like you
so now he's go ahead, sorry.
oh, you were I well, you had kind of mentioned it. Like, I guess I kind of last week on the show was talking about, well, he's got to be cleared, right? But then Punk made a point of saying he wasn't cleared this week.
No,
I
and from all I've read, he is not legitimately cleared yet.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of a lot of physicality at Money in the Bank to
That
not
was
be
quite a bit
cleared.
of that was quite a bit of first. I mean, granted, he didn't take anything. He just
That
did
is
inflicted,
correct.
chair shots and didn't really do much in the way of actual moves. So, I mean, I believe they're confident that he's going to be cleared by SummerSlam. Of course, but now you've got this gorilla giant, this giant gorilla in the room of Seth Rollins now threatening him, saying that I won't let you get your revenge on McIntyre, and anytime you try to accomplish this, I'll be there. It's a whole it's gotten unnecessarily convoluted when Punk and McIntyre has been the feud for 6 months. They need to have their one-on-one match and probably a series of one-on-one matches. And Rollins needs to do something else. And again, if they weren't planning on having Rollins back later in the fall, and now he has to be shoehorned into so many different things because he's a main event guy, so you can't just shove him down the card either.
Oh,
It's
right.
it 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 makes it's gonna make for something. Maybe they'll make sense of it, by the time
Oh.
we get going. Because once Punk is cleared, they really should just go with Punk and McIntyre as a singles match, and Punk and Rollins should not touch each other until they're ready to have that big one-on-one match. A triple threat match
Yeah.
makes no sense in this. It dilutes the Punk McIntyre issue, and it rushes the Punk Rollins issue
Yeah.
unnecessarily as well.
Yeah, I agree. That's it. Yeah, it would be interesting to know if Rollins came back early or if the WWE's like, "Hey, just in case Punk isn't cleared." Like that part of the story, I'm not sure that we will ever get an answer to.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is kind of curious. Like you said, like, you don't have anything set up for him,
Right. I
really.
mean, the only other thing, as I said, is he's added to the world title match as a triple threat. And maybe that will happen once the bug is cleared and they move forward with Punk and McIntyre. So then we shall see. It's a convoluted situation right now.
Yes, it is. Yeah, so El Campeon, Damian Priest, at least for the time being, gonna be the one taking on Gunther at SummerSlam.
Yes, he will.
That is an interesting situation to have come up.
It is, yeah.
I guess I've been good with the heel on heel feuds, so I shouldn't really argue too much, but this one still seems a little strange. Like, it almost seems like I'm gonna go there, I guess, a weak title win for Gunther.
There's something to that, yeah.
You know,
It
just
does.
because Damian Priest, I still like him a lot, but I still don't think he has a signature win.
No, he has not been able to score a big win over anybody who claims. He hasn't been anyone that wasn't without a lot of shenanigans. No,
Yes.
even for a heel standard, He is not. He is. His matches have been so filled with shenanigans. I mean, the Jey Uso was, I guess, simple Judgment Day interference more.
Oh, right.
But even then, you know, that still counts. And then, of course, the the Clash of the Castle. You know, he keeps winning these matches because other people run in who have nothing to do with him. They don't even want him.
he's just I wouldn't say collateral damage because he's winning the matches still.
His last two title offenses have been a pawn in the McIntyre Punk feud.
Let's
use that terminology.
Yeah, so that's why I don't like that. Just seems like a weird spot to put Gunther in because he can win the title, but it's kind of from a weak champ.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine he is going to win, which maybe at that point putting Rollins in the match makes more sense. Up the star power, get a complete baby face. Yes, Priest is basically about a month or so away from being a full baby face. I think we can figure that out, but he's not yet.
That story definitely seems like it's in the works, but it's a little further out still.
Yeah.
They are definitely laying down some clues that is going to be the case.
Yeah. Oh, some big clues were laid on Monday. Cause this is a perfect transition. Throughout the night, McIntyre first gets a phone call from someone who he asks where they're at. And is as if he's expecting them to show up. Your brain immediately starts moving to who that would end up being, and then even more laying it on thick, saying he was gonna tell the rest of the guys about what was coming, but then he said, I'll just keep it to myself. Dominic needs to learn something about consequences. And boy did he ever.
This whole Liv Morgan thing continues to just crack me up.
It does.
Just in so many different facets, like because Dominic plays his role pretty well of trying to be reluctant, at least on screen. And then everyone with their reactions to things that are going on, like the stretching that was going on this week.
Oh, that was fantastic. Yes, that was great.
ahead of time. Because Damian Priest always has this great, like, amused look on his face, I think. JD McDonagh has, like, these, like, it does fit in. Like, he has these great big eyes, and Finn Balor always has some funny look. And then you get Carlito has been at his best. Just,
yes.
Is he the new Ron Simmons? This is the only reason we're going to bring him in?
That's
cool.
His reactions are fantastic.
So yeah, there was that part, and then it obviously does it was kind of interesting because Liv Morgan did talk about all night throughout Monday, hey, I'm gonna help you beat your dad for the first time.
Yes,
and she did do that.
Yes.
And then quickly skedaddled when Rhea Ripley officially
Yes. Liv helps Dom get, strip something with Ray, sets him up for the frog splash. Dominic gets his first ever win over his father. He's so happy. He embraces Liv Morgan, realizes what he's doing. Then she just absolutely tackles him, straddles him. And as he is getting into the moment and ready to kiss her, then Rhea Ripley's music hits. The crowd went insane. Just a Road Warrior pop for Rhea Ripley's return. Although it's kind of amusing how they filmed it. They filmed it like she was so far away. That was weird. They made some choices production-wise that I feel like worked for the situation. This one, I mixed feelings about. But the hilarious part is her march to the ring was so felt so slow. Liv was all ready to to the other end of the building by the time she even got near ringside.
Yeah, well, I do think that Damian Priest has kind of laid down some groundwork that Rhea's almost more concerned about Dominic than she is Liv in some ways.
I think that's what we're saying. Well, plus, you know, the lack of time left in the show also, you know, played a factor in what they had to accomplish. There is that video, I don't know if you've seen it yet, of while she was kind of like staring down Liv Morgan from afar, a production staff had to like give her this high sign: you have to get in the ring and do this stick thing with Dominic right now.
I did not see that.
Yeah, they maybe only had 30 seconds from that point.
to get
any kind of an interaction between Rhea and Dominic, and she, you know, shoves him away. And you know, the later, of course, they would show that him walking away and him, you know, him begging her for forgiveness the whole way. And yeah, no, this is this. Okay.
I did see that portion where someone had spliced together that scene and then Eddie Guerrero trying to apologize to China.
Yes, they did that very, very well. And then there was the shot of Liv Morgan behind the curtain on the other side of the building, seeing what was going on, but smiling. So she's going to play this like this is still part of her plan to take everything from Rhea Ripley. So you know, very you know, and you know, playing this up that Dominic still hasn't fully embraced with Liv himself before Rhea came back was a really smart way to play this. Because now Dominic is basically, quote, you know, it feels like when we get to Rhea and Liv at SummerSlam, maybe the finish is a little bit of a foregone conclusion that, you know, Dominic does the full turn and helps Liv win.
Oh.
But at the same time, it's the right thing to do. I think, you know, there's legs to this. You don't want Rhea to just destroy Liv in match one. So I think Liv should win the first match.
Yeah, you want that satisfaction to come at a slightly later time. Like,
yeah.
I would imagine that will end up happening. But yeah, she definitely needs one win before at least before things title changes hands at least.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, you know, it'll feel like, you know, once again, they've done this whole storyline, they've done this big build up, and you know what, it will lead to a women's championship match people are going to care about. People are going to really, it's going to feel like one of the bigger matches at SummerSlam. It's not going to be one of those things like, well, it's a quadruple main event type of thing where, you know, yeah, we're just shoehorning the women's kind of the match kind of in here. Like, it's really not looked at as that important in the grand scheme of things.
Right.
Yeah, but no, this is going to feel like a big match because they've taken the time with it and they've really built it up.
Yeah, especially, yeah, with it likely happening at SummerSlam. You know, they don't have too much more time to get there. They don't really need to write any more story at this point in a lot of ways. Like, that turn obviously needs to happen at SummerSlam and or later.
Right.
So, 'cause yeah, like they've never really, I guess there's a lot to see what ends up happening. Are Rhea and Damian Priest some type of a weird duo moving forward, or do they separate from each other?
There's something to that. You know, like, I mean, they have to, you know, be linked together in storylines for at least for a little while, I think.
Yeah, just because, I mean, we know that we saw Dominic coming out of the locker room that Liv was in, but JD was in there also. And then you can argue that Finn has some idea about Liv's plan, considering he had the hotel room key.
Well, there's also there's the the idea, the possibility that Finn Balor is in some ways the architect of this plan, all this planning, or that, and he's complete, you know, he's completely in cahoots with Liv Morgan and all this.
That is conceivable. So yeah, it will be interesting to continue to see how this unfolds and who is the real mastermind.
In a Judgment Day without Priest and without Rhea Ripley, Finn Balor basically becomes the de facto leader no matter what. It's not going to be one of the other three.
No. No. As much as I love Dominic and his character, leadership is not going to be one of his qualities that I look at anytime soon. And JD McDonagh is a backup singer if I've ever seen one. So, you know, and I don't think there's going to be a second, like, you know, Rhea Ripley was definitely at least during the, hey, we don't have a leader days of the Judgment Day, she was the leader. I don't know. I think Liv could pull that off if she wants to, but I still think, I guess just really Rhea's size makes it a little more authoritative to me than Liv Morgan running the show. But she could, you know. It would seem to be Finn Balor or her, or some combination thereof. So, that is something else. That storyline keeps on going, and I guess I'm not too surprised. They definitely played it up like Rhea Ripley would be back. Even when she mentioned that she would be out, I was almost surprised that they took the title from her, but it was just long enough of a time period that you probably didn't want to not have a champion for three months or something.
Yeah, and the whole thing with having to go to Becky first was also, I guess in hindsight, kind of weird, because she didn't really do anything with it other than defend it against Liv in the match that she lost.
Oh. Right. Yeah. They're like, hey, we need some star power. Well, I mean, she did put over Liv. I guess that's probably Liv's most signature win.
Yeah. It's definitely Liv's most signature win, yes.
So, other than that part, Becky really did not do a whole lot with it. I mean, she didn't have it for very long either. Just because, like I said, like, it's only been 3 or 4 months, so it's been a relatively short time frame. Just so many of these injuries, it's like, hey, I'm going to be out 6 months. I'm going to be out 9 months to a year. It's like, when you have these long-term injuries, having a somewhat short one is always kind of weird. Like, it's not as much of a surprise that they're coming back. That's looking forward to that one. Elsewhere on Money in the Bank, sir, were you of the mindset that the women's Money in the Bank match was the best match of the evening?
I was. I couldn't tell you one spot that took place in the men's match. It was that paint by numbers ladder match we've seen a million times. This was maybe the most depth-defying of the women's matches we've seen, women's ladder matches we've seen. There was about 3 or 4 spots that was like, oh my, oh my god moments. Two of them right at the very end. I have no idea how Zoe Stark is still alive.
The fact that she wasn't showing off like stitches in the back of her head.
I was more worried about her neck.
That Was it a Michinoku driver into the
It
ladder?
was more like a, what was it, like a fisherman's buster, something along those lines, or one of those types of moves that I don't remember the name of it. It's
Yeah, well, whatever. It looked rough. In her cell afterwards, I'm like, oh my gosh, like that was a hell of a cell job after
and
that
then
too.
EO selling it on her own. Her own move, like she was folded up like an accordion and couldn't get herself out of this position.
Yeah, that was very Rob Van Dam-esque of her.
Yeah.
Just I guess I always think about him selling the frog splash being too painful, but man, I guess that was the other thing that was wild about some of the spots in this women's match. And that one was one where I thought about it, like those ladders seemed extra bouncy for whatever reason, because Zoe Stark hit that thing and like bounced off of it, and Io Sky just bounced in the opposite direction. And then, oh my gosh, Chelsea Green, evidently another side by side clip, I think brought to us by Jordan Grace, really. At least that's initially where I saw it, where evidently Chelsea Green had a very similar table spot in TNA.
You could have fooled me.
Hadn't seen the clip online, I wouldn't have seen it. So,
Yeah,
but man,
I agree.
that fall was
That was
yeah.
crazy. Anytime you do the two tables together, that gets dangerous. Because any one of those things, the legs, the wood, it could always just,
Break
just
the
kind of
wrong way.
break the wrong way and carve you up in the eye, your slit, your throat, God knows what. That was definitely a terrifying fall. I mean, obviously took it like a champ. Well, won as well as it could go, as it could. Haven't heard any kind of injury. Probably haven't heard anything about any kind of injury. Obviously, both EO and Zoe were on Raw as well. So, once again, no, death defying match. Some huge bumps, but everyone came out okay. So, good stuff.
And we end up with Tiffany Stratton. It is Tiffy time officially. So, congratulations to her. She did not cash in, so it will be interesting to see how long she ends up holding on to that thing before she
Yes,
executes it.
her and her new best friend Nia Jax. Nia Jax has the SummerSlam Championship match against Bayley. That match is set in stone. And you gotta believe, I think I mentioned this last week, that if Tiffany's got that briefcase, she's gonna be lurking around with it. So even if Bayley escapes Nia Jax, she may not escape Tiffany.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty logical spot, especially like you said, like if they hadn't paired Tiffany and Naya recently, might not be front of the mind. It would probably be there because it's the Money in the Bank briefcase. But yeah, tying those two together definitely makes it smell like that's gonna happen more than it won't. So, yeah, hey, I am ready for Tiffy Time Champion. Although in some, it's another one where, like, I guess I wouldn't have minded if she had gotten some more wins. Cause I'm not gonna say buried on the main roster, but she hasn't really had much of a run on the main roster.
No,
Cause what,
it's
she got
been.
called up in October-ish or so? Or that
Yeah,
felt like it
she.
was towards the end of last year.
Yeah, she hasn't really. There hasn't been a set real. She hasn't really had a big storyline. Has not had great consistency, even in her appearances. And I know there was that Instagram situation that she immediately apologized for involving Jade Cargill and She said she swears up and down that she had not, she didn't hear the audio that was attached to it, and you know what I'm talking about, right?
No, I don't think I do.
Okay. So I think it was before Backlash. There was the eight or six woman or eight woman tag or what have you that they were in together. There's a moment in the match where Tiffany like forearms Jade Cargill off the apron. Someone made an edit of that, set to a Instagram reel using a sound that said, "You black bitch." And Tiffany swears up and down she did not hear the audio until after she saw it. She saw the clip and put and shared it, which I believe her. I completely believe her because that's the hilarity of the internet. She said that thing. She had that thing down in under a minute, but people had already like seen it and screen recorded it and shared it themselves.
Good Lord, that I. That's one of those I envy no one that is in their positions. Just I just don't like in no way. I don't want to put up with that bullshit. Like straight up, like that is wild. Because yeah, like I don't know how many times I watch clips on the internet without sound.
Oh, I do all the time.
Especially on my phone. Like if someone tells me that, I'm like, yeah, I believe you. Like you don't need to talk me into this.
No, I do it all the time. Yeah. I probably learned a lesson about listening to a sound before I share anything.
Oh, nothing like getting some Tiffy time lessons. Okay, yeah, that is probably a good thing to do, I guess, before sharing a clip at least.
Yeah,
or even liking a clip sometimes. Although,
yes,
is it just Twitter now that doesn't show likes?
Yeah, just Twitter doesn't show likes. Instagram, you can, it does, but it's not as prominent. I don't think.
No, there's usually like a bunch of numbers and then like one name if you know them.
Right. But yeah. Suffice to say, Tiffany's had maybe an inconsistent push on the main roster, but obviously now they're all in on Tiffy time.
Yeah. One way or the other, I think the women's 100% cash-in rate is going to keep up.
Yeah, there's no reason to have Tiffany win that title at some point.
Yeah, as much as I have felt the push has been inconsistent at best, having her lose that thing would not be a good choice. Well, there were a lot of people that did not think having Braun Breaker lose to Sami Zayn was a good choice. We have a little bit of possibly hindsight as 2020 here now.
Yeah.
With what we saw on Raw. Do you think that that loss is okay after what we saw on Raw?
It's okay. Yeah. Do you risk completely stalling someone's momentum with the wrong loss at the wrong time? Yeah, but that's not the case here. I didn't think it would be the case. Obviously, he is now gone. He's lost his shit, as we could say. destroys Sami Zayn, ends up in a match with Dragunov again that Sami Zayn does get involved in, but it ends with him standing over both of them after he destroyed them. So once again, this whole he's getting that title. I mean, he's getting that title eventually. It might be in the form of a multiple person match perhaps at SummerSlam with certainly others involved, Sami Zayn and Ilya Dragunov for sure. You can mix in Sheamus to that. Bronson Reed, maybe Pete Dunne now, because that became a thing on Raw. Is Is Ludwig Kaiser, could Ludwig Kaiser be back in time? Because he was also mixed in with the whole thing with Bron Breakker and Sheamus and Sami Zayn and all these guys. So I could certainly see a multi-person match. Now, granted, could Breakker have won the title in a singles match and then successfully defended it in a big multi-person 5-6 person match? Yeah. But yeah, once again, this doesn't. It. They were at risk with Bron Breakker of him getting super popular and turning face way before they were probably ready for him to. So him having that sore loser moment where he destroys the very popular, much loved Sami Zayn. It's probably a good moment to have. Keep the chips at bay for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I know that Jeremy and I have probably talked about it more, but I know that you and I have at least mentioned it, where people love someone who's a badass, and Bron Breakker has just been presented as a badass. Like, you know, he's not cheating to win, he's maybe a little bit of a dickhead, but that doesn't usually seem to deter people from rooting for you. And I think you're right, like, I guess I wasn't upset by the loss that much and the Sami Zayn retention. I'm like, oh, okay, they decided to go this route. And then, yeah, you see what ends up happening on Monday. It's like, yeah, he's getting that title sooner rather than later. You know? Either that or they're going to find some way to sidetrack him. If they put him in a multi-person match and they decide to go with someone else, I think it'd be strange.
I don't think that. Yeah, I think he needs this title. I think, you know, a good reign with the IC belt will help him a lot. The world title scene in 2024, 2025 feels like it's going to be pretty packed.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. There are a lot of names up there that you can juggle between, especially with Seth Rollins being back.
Yeah, Gunther, Rollins, Punk, all people who could. And I'm thinking there could be another name added to that list. John Cena. As he entered the ring at Money in the Bank, already wearing his 2025 farewell shirt, so and the last time is now. Oh, they're gonna market the shit out of all of this. This is gonna be a merchandise. He mentioned the Royal Rumble, he mentioned Elimination Chamber, he mentioned his last WrestleMania, which a lot of people, including me, interpreted as WrestleMania being his last match ever. Instead, he has clarified that he will be around in various form or fashion in the ring between January and December. So I guess we're going to get a big John Cena farewell, PLE, in December, which we haven't been having December PLEs or pay-per-views for a number of years now.
Oh, but it looks
like we're going to get one in 2025 at least, devoted to the final match of one John Cena, which is good. I think if he were to actually have his final match at WrestleMania, he risks it being overshadowed by The Rock's presence. And everything else going on too.
It's almost overshadowing WrestleMania itself in some ways. Like, I know that Ric Flair technically had a last match at WrestleMania.
Yeah,
but it felt like that kind of worked into the show. John Cena's been such a thing for the WWE that, yeah, like I really do think he'd overshadow it. Because, I mean, he's the greatest of all time. Yeah. Take away from the championship match maybe a little bit.
It would probably take away from the champ. Well, It would take away from a number of everything other than whatever they do with The Rock. Once again, because that's
Oh,
just
yeah.
Rock is The Rock.
Yeah.
So yeah, so let Cena have his have a year. I'm sure they'll take him everywhere. I'm sure they'll take him to other countries and do. It's not all gonna be all the dates aren't all gonna be in the U.S. I'm almost positive, or North America even.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll do his last match in every major city they can think of.
Oh. Yeah, I would, 'cause I believe, at least I saw the number somewhere floating around that he was thinking somewhere between 30 to 40 dates, which
I think it's like
does,
35 to 40 or something. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I mean, that does put you on the majority of weeks, you know, depending
Yeah,
upon which show they decide to slot him on.
and then there's is the difference is there a difference between dates and matches? Is he going to do 35
Oh.
to 40 matches, but also be on the television beforehand to build up these matches?
Yeah, with that many dates, I feel like you're going to be on TV to hype some stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it would almost be good for him to skip a PLE here and there, honestly.
I imagine he will, because I think he should say he's still got other things he's got to be doing. I can't imagine if he's going to keep up a schedule in WWE that, when does he film anything with, insurance issues and all that. But he says he still has some things to work through. It doesn't sound like he's gonna return at all in 2024, which is a
Oh,
good thing. It's
yeah.
a good thing he got that 6-man tag back the night after WrestleMania with The Miz and R-Truth against the Judgment Day, so he can say that he had a match in 2024. Because remember that at the end of 2022, he had to get right at the very end, like the 30th of December, to have his one match in
Yes.
2022
It was the New
to
Year's
have
Eve show that they did. So he did a paper, or he had a match New Year's Eve.
No, I think it was the day before New Year's Eve, but whatever,
Okay.
whatever, Fast Act, whatever. So, but I do think if he's going to be around that much, the idea that he's going to squeeze in that 17th title reign and beat Flair's record is very alive.
There have already been a lot of people calling for it to happen.
Yeah.
And hey, if you're gonna work that many dates, it seems like a plausible thing to do.
Yeah,
Like, it almost seems wild to give The
it seems
Rock the
inevitable. It seems like
championship,
it seems like they
you
have
know?
to, because oh my God, that
Oh.
he is, they have just had him with his sporadic appearances over the years. They and he had to make a he had to make an issue of it before the solo match. Just he hasn't won a singles match since 2018.
That is still wild.
That's insane. Yeah. So yeah. So let's put that to bed real quick. Let's put that to bed. Let's yeah. Let's let John Cena go out on some kind of a high here.
Yeah, like I would be completely okay with him. Do I just want to say the Sting treatment win
Yeah. Oh yeah.
going out the
Absolutely.
door?
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, he doesn't need to have the championship as he's going out the door, but
No, he doesn't have to win every match before he leaves, like Sting did. But you should have the ratio of wins to losses should be higher on the win column,
Oh,
and he should
yes.
win the last and he should win the last one, and maybe the last one should be against a old foe, an Orton, a Punk, something like that.
Oh. Him and The Rock, one last face off.
You could, they could, you could go there. You could go there too. But I imagine like an Orton would be probably feel more,
Oh.
everything coming full circle and how he, inappropriate for him.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a fun match to see one last time. You know, it doesn't need to get as weird as Edge and Randy Orton did, but yeah, just play it off that way. They probably had one too many matches against each other anyway.
Oh, absolutely. They oh, I think Cena Orton had more than one too many. Holy crap. But we also what? We also haven't seen in 10 years at this point too. It's been 10 years since the last one, so it can be fresh again by next year.
Oh man, yes, yes, it will be. So yeah, I just love how much of a merch king John Cena is, by the
Oh,
way.
this is
Like you
already.
let, yeah, you let off with that, but I just, yeah, the fact that I saw, oh, because I was at a soccer match during Money in the Bank itself, so I watched it. And this is the reason why I like jam packed like all my wrestling into Sunday, basically. So I watched Money in the Bank Sunday, but I already knew that Cena was coming back, and I just started howling because I saw a clip on Twitter, and I'm just like, he has new merch. Like, didn't even need to see the promo itself or anything. I'm like, of course that motherfucker has new merch. He's like, he learned from the best. He learned from Steve Austin. Always have new merch. People are gonna buy it. Especially when you only come around every so often, every year. You know, keep that merch stuff fresh. So yeah, the only other thing I guess to cover from Money in the Bank itself, the Bloodline ends up defeating Cody Rhodes, Kevin Owens, and Randy Orton. And to be more specific, Solo Sikoa ends up getting a pin on Cody Rhodes.
Yes, he did, as expected. They
Yeah.
had to do it. They absolutely had to have Solo pin Cody if we're going to get to Cody and Solo as the championship match, as the main event of SummerSlam.
Yes. And I think you and I talked about that in the preview. Like it just really felt like it needed to happen. And oh my gosh, speaking of memorable botches from Money in the Bank, the fact that Tongaloa doesn't know how to low blow someone, I was in tears.
He had
Just
one job.
tears.
It's the meme come to life. He had one job, and he screwed it up.
Yeah, he A misses one, and then B, I did not see this, but upon further review and clips on Twitter, he actually ended up punching his own brother in the head when he actually executed the low blow. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, that's just insult to injury right there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm pretty sure we're seeing some buyer's regret here. Yes.
Oh my gosh, he is gonna be a really, really expensive valet.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Wow, because I did end up seeing some of his other, let's call it work, on Twitter also. Like someone had posted a clip of him trying to do a 619. Good Lord, like he couldn't do a low blow right. Why did he have it in his mind that he could do a 619?
Oh boy.
Yeah, it did not go well. But anywho, it does seem like, oh, that was speaking of this match and something else that I wanted to bring up. This is another thing I saw online where someone had mentioned, they're like, oh, Jacob Fatu can no sell a DDT, but if Will Ospreay does this, the internet's up in arms. I feel like this person's just being disingenuous or not
Oh yeah.
realizing what people's points really are about Will Ospreay not selling for 90% of a match. Basically, or making the Superman come back six times in a match. Just like, you know, after the third time, it's kind of gotten boring, dude. Fatu did it once, and then that was it. And it was at the beginning of a match.
Yeah, very beginning of the match. He's supposed to be a monster. Samoans are supposed to have hard heads, that whole thing. Yes, it's incredibly stupid thing to get upset about.
Yeah. So, yeah. But I thought the match itself was fairly good for what it
Yeah.
was. Yeah. we got the result that we expected, and we haven't seen any results from this because, you know, hey, it's a SmackDown brand, and that won't be gotten to until next week.
Right, yes.
So I don't know if there's anything more to say about that other than those kinds of things. And I'm trying to remember what else happened on Raw that we really didn't cover. Because is there much more to say about the Rollins and Punk stuff that we didn't already say since
no,
they
not
had
really.
A confrontation? Okay. Oof. I guess there is this that did come up. I had a good laugh that Jey Uso gets a distraction from the Wyatt Six, literally says yeet, and leaves the ringside after beating Chad Gable, who, again, you can leave it a little open about whether he truly is the problem that the Wyatt Six are after, just because they continue to not attack him at all, really, outside of the original assault.
Well,
and the videos have kind of implied him, but haven't really directly marked him yet. And Jey Uso's continued involvement, I guess, in these segments still makes me at least think that he could be a potential victim in this whole thing.
I don't know exactly what to say, because I just still not totally sure exactly what the end game for any of this is. We got the third Modalis video that felt like diminishing returns. It didn't feel like we had any new ground here. The segment of Bo Dallas in Pierce's office, that was interesting, because they're leaning in on the Bo Dallas part more than I thought they would.
Oh.
Like him unmasked.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because did you even really see? I was almost going to call him Captain Howdy, but that is an old Twisted Sister song. Uncle Howdy. Because was he Uncle Howdy even in the video this week? Or was it all just Bo Dallas talking, I think?
It was largely all Bo Dallas talking. I heard he did the Uncle Howdy voice at various points off camera, but we did not see. I don't think we saw Uncle Howdy.
So yeah, I'm with you. Like, they have really leaned into the Bo Dallas part of this far more than expected.
Yeah,
and that was the interesting turn for me. The fact that he actually showed up it feels like it is starting to maybe get a little long in the tooth. But maybe they're getting somewhere, and maybe they're just waiting until after SummerSlam to really go for this. I don't know.
And I was hoping that they would hit that with these videos, there would be a different one every week, or a different one of these characters having, you know, getting the chance to speak about their journey to the Wyatt Six. Like, Rowan's would obviously be incredibly, you know, captivating to listen to him talk about, you know, losing his two best friends and how that affected his life. And, you know, those, I'm sure, might have some interesting things too. Rowan's would definitely be the most interesting in that regard, how it connects to Bray Wyatt. Because the rest of them don't have the connection to Bray Wyatt.
Oh, right. Because, yeah, even Nikki Cross wasn't in the group, was she?
No. She never had anything to do with Bray, no.
Okay. So, yeah, Yeah, it's just Bo and Rowan that have the direct connection there. But yeah, that would help shake things up. Like if they're not going to peer, those people have kind of been pushed off a little bit. You know, other than Nikki Cross, honestly. But even
Yeah.
that, Michael Cole keeps on basically calling her it. Like she's from the Addams Family.
Yeah.
So like she's not
Because the Bo
even really
Dallas thing
getting
tells you
anything out of
that,
it.
yeah, because the Bo Dallas part is, should be saying that we know who all these people actually are.
Oh.
But we're not really doing that with the others yet.
Yeah, and I think that helped freshen up these like if they're going to continue to do these videos, I think that would help freshen this up and stretch things out a little bit. If they continue to concentrate on Bo Dallas, it could be a mistake. I don't know, you know, like it yeah, there is not a lot to go on still. Like we're a month into this and there still isn't a whole lot to go on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess a lot of idle speculation on my part. Yeah, I don't know. Is there much to be said about Pete Dunne being a singles wrestler again?
Not really. That's
Yep, he's just kind of is what he is at this point. Like, I don't have a whole lot. I don't have much more hope for him than that was gonna be the last one. Braun and man, six man tag match, that was just kind of whatever. Braun and Ilya. I guess this one was kind of interesting from Raw. Damage Control ends up getting a W over Lyra, Katana Chance, and Caden Carter, only to have a new women's faction show up in the WWE. I don't know if you want to say it's been foreshadowed, but they've definitely. Sonya Deville has been talking to Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark quite a bit. Seemed like an interesting choice to attack Damage Control, especially since Dakota Kai has been getting a side eye from Io Sky for, oh, about a month now?
It was very, strange circumstances. I don't have anything against the idea of Sonya and Shayna and Zoe together. It's probably a good move for them, but it's weird that they got together and they attacked heels. Heels who've been arguing with each other. So, what does this mean for the damage control storyline? Who are the faces? Who are the heels here? It seemed like they're supposed to set up as heels, and they're gonna, Shane and Zoe together are gonna go for the tag belts again, because they made that part, that
Yep,
right
that part was made
there.
clear, yeah. So, yeah, and I don't know if Sonya's just gonna sit back and be a manager, if she's actually gonna wrestle at some point. She's had an interesting career, to say the least. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to think about it. So yeah, I am for another women's faction, but yeah, it just still seems like a really awkward setup, like you said, for the reasons that you said. What did you think of the Gunther video package?
Good video package.
I thought it was kind of a interesting choice, given that it feels like he hasn't been live for a while. I guess when there are other title matches and you're just waiting on yours to come around, there's no real reason to be there. So yeah, we'll see what. But yeah, I liked it. But it, like I said, it felt a little bit awkward to me. I would have expected him to maybe do something in person to just be in front of the crowd.
Right.
Last but not least, though, the main event of SmackDown, we ended up getting DIY ends up becoming the men's tag team champions over A Town Down Under. I think we talked about this being their ceiling.
Yeah, oh, it absolutely is. Yes.
And yeah, I mean, this is about it.
Yeah, this,
Like,
yeah, I mean,
I'm
yeah,
very happy
this
for
is
Johnny
it.
and Tommaso. I like both of them, but there still isn't a whole lot of tag team division to really want me to get invested in this.
Yeah, no, there really isn't. Then again, it's definitely a situation where the championships make the champions make the belts, and two guys who aren't being pushed that hard. They did get this main event spot on the, it's the night before a major PLE, and none of the people involved in the who had a match on the PLE were gonna have a match, so it leaves you with, this is your TV main event. It went as well as you could expect, and fine match, good moment for Johnny and
Oh, yeah.
Tommaso. I don't know how long it's gonna last for him. I could see the Bloodline team, taking those belts pretty quickly. Because that's a
Would not
Bloodline
surprise
MMO.
me.
Although I'm not sure if it'll be Tama Tonga and Tongaloa. I'm not sure they want to risk Tongaloa as any kind of a champion.
Yeesh. Yep, that part was covered earlier. Don't need to rehash
Yeah.
that part. So
But.
yeah, would not surprise me if it's Jacob and Tama Tonga, with Solo being the solo guy.
Right.
So yeah, congrats to DIY.
Guess them. And a part of this that's. I'm not sure the world is ready for babyface Austin Theory, but it seems like they're going to try.
Yeah, it's really weird that they set that up. Not quite sure why. I thought they worked as a tag team. It seemed like it was maybe rehabbing Austin Theory a little bit. Not sure why you stop it and why you put a rift between the two and make Grayson Waller the dickhead the whole time. You
Yeah,
know,
well,
they're
Grayson Waller is
definitely.
going to be the dickhead. I mean, Grayson, there's, I would venture to guess that there is no babyface future in Grayson Waller. He is going to be the douchebag for the remainder of his career.
Oh, well, congratulations to him, I guess. Anything else to say before we punch on out of here, sir?
No, I think we're good.
Okie dokie. Well, did not have a belt time beer because I am a little bit under the weather, so I am not imbibing bad vibes currently. So come back for another beer suggestion next week. Oh no, not next week. Don't worry, I'll have plenty of beer suggestions in the near future, and they will be many a travel beer. So I guess I can go ahead and lay that out there. I am at DeFrag11. He is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any other locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, or YouTube Music. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.